Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we crack open the final mailbag of 2017.
Oh my God, there's literally a half-eaten meatball sub in here.
That's probably yours. All right, Patrick, it is almost the new year. 2018,
yeah.
And tonight we're gonna party like it's 1999.
We're gonna party like it's the 20th anniversary of 1999.
I kind of blew my daughter's mind about 1999 just yesterday. We were having a conversation about songs to play on New Year's Eve, mm-hmm. You know, and I was saying like, you know, "Auld Lang Syne" is the song, and she was like, "I thought that was a Christmas song." I said, "But no, it's really a New Year's Eve thing." And then I was like, "But beyond that, I don't know that many like New Year's songs." I mean, you two had the song New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So you probably could play that. And then I said, but you could also play 1999 because it's a song about a year. And then I kind of blew her mind by saying, like, when, you know, when that song came out, it was about the future. We're going to party like it's the future. You know, this is, you know, crazy. Huh? Her, right, right. So now it's, I suppose, has a different meaning. Like, you're going to go back in time. It's going to be sort of quaint.
Right.
All right, so it's New Year's Eve, or I mean, it's almost New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It's the last Rock in the Suburbs of 2017.
It's the last Rock in the Suburbs of 2017.
Yes.
Going out with a bang.
And it's also episode number 250. Isn't that funny how that worked out?
Quarter of a million.
Just as we planned it, yeah. I suppose.
It's really incredible.
So how crazy is that?
Yeah, and it's appropriate, Jim. It's fan mail. It's going to be a fan mail Friday.
Fan mail Friday is what we're going to do.
And what are we without our listeners? Essentially, just
two guys in the basement.
Tiny pebbles.
With a bunch of equipment that they would have no need for.
Right.
Not for the listeners, so... Yeah, it would really be sad if we sat here, you know, with this, with the microphones and headphones, and you know, nobody was listening. So, no, it's been great. The
it's been
the
amazing.
Fan base has really, I think, grown over the year that we've been doing this. Almost a year we've been doing this, and that's actually my favorite thing about it is you know, getting, you feel like you get to know some of these people.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah,
get in touch.
Feels
with
like
us.
We have a lot of friends. So, yeah,
it's great. Yeah, as a person who doesn't normally have many friends, I feel really good about that. This has been.
When I show up at 2 o'clock in the morning asking to sleep on your couch, you'll be sad that you listen to Rock in the Suburbs.
That's right. That's exactly right. Okay, so this is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And you mentioned this is going to be a fan mail Friday for us. We haven't done one in a real one in a while. We did the one about with Tommy Keen feedback last week.
Did.
But this one is just going to grab a bag of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've been so busy lately, we've sort of been neglecting the fan mail, so... we went through it today.
Great way to wrap up
the
year.
Giant stack of stuff. And let's kick this off with an email from our friend Jimmy Linetti. And this one I really like. So for so many reasons. So he says, "Hi, Jim and Patrick. Just a quick email to share how your show has made me seek out music you guys have mentioned." That's nice, right?
That's really nice.
"First, from your Petty shows, I really liked the song one listener brought up called Girl on LSD.
I was in love with a girl on LSD. She'd see things I'd never see. She broadened her perspective. Then I got more selective. I was in love with a girl on LSD."
The song wasn't on Spotify, so I tracked down the single.
Ding, 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 ding.
It was a B-side of You Don't Know How It Feels. Totally dig that tune. Then, based on Tommy Stinson's recommendation, when we had an interview with Tommy, I had to track down his example of Perfect Pop. Nothing from Slade is on Spotify, so this cassette that he bought includes the song When the Lights Are Out. Super great song. Of course, Tommy has great taste.
Yeah, we mentioned Slade is not on Spotify.
I know, isn't that weird?
Mind-blowing.
Finally, after that great interview you did with the recently passed Tommy Keen, I tracked down a cassette EP of his that is not on the streaming services. The title track, Run Now, is so good, and the live version of Lou Reed's Kill Your Sons is really rocking. Tommy was still playing this cover regularly in his solo sets.
Yeah.
Anyway, all these tapes are a great addition to my cassette library and sound perfect when I pop them into my realistic, that's a brand, boombox down in my glove shop.
DJ Glove Repair.
Yes. Plus, All three purchases cost me less than $15 total on Discogs. Jimmy Linette.
Nice.
So there you go. And he sent a photo of the cassettes.
Yes, he did.
Including the Slade album. And,
you know, folks, this is a man who makes wallets out of baseball gloves. So you know how cool he is.
I love that he tracked them down specifically on cassette.
I know, it's fantastic.
So,
great stuff. He's got a boombox in his workshop. Yeah. What else is he going to play?
Of course. It makes perfect sense, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Kasingle.
Yeah. Got to pop it in when you go to work at 9 a.m., man. I got to get on the job.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Jimmy. I love seeing the photos of the cassettes.
Yeah,
great
amazing.
Stuff. All right. Now, let's get to a phone call that we got to the Suburban Party
great.
Line. This one is about the episode we did with Dan Gursky.
Oh, yeah.
Going to see house concerts.
Hey, guys. This is Tom Neuerberg. I'm a loyal listener out here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I literally just finished listening to the episode about the house concerts, and I wanted to just give you a quick call, tell you about a couple experiences I've had with house concerts. The most recent was a house concert. It was a backyard concert, and it featured a local artist that I'm a really big fan of. Her name is Megan Slankard, and she did a little backyard concert in a neighborhood near mine. I actually think you guys would really like her and her style of music.
It's warm inside, right here by the fire. I would love to stay beside you all day long. I'm looking to the sky, hoping for a good sign. Watch it crack right open and sing me a winter song. Oh, I don't know anything at all about tomorrow. Hold me close, just another minute before I wander. I must go. Here in the mountains, filling up in my lungs,
me
lifting
away.
Me up,
me
giving me another way of loving you another day. The world is so big and tugging at my heartstrings. I must have been.
She comes from Tracy, California, which is where I live. She now bases herself out of San Francisco. But she does a lot of local shows, and she does a lot of living room concerts, backyard concerts, things of that nature. And then the other living room concert experience I had was about 5-6 years ago, and it's a great memory, but it's actually kind of a bittersweet memory due to the fact that the concert involved Pat Benizio from the Smithereens, who just passed away. I don't know when you'll hear this message, but literally not much more than 24 hours ago. And he was at a friend of mine had him play a show at his house, and it was a situation you discussed on the episode where I think it was a day in between shows for him with the Smithereens, and he would actually travel from show to show in a vehicle, and if he had a spare date, he would try to book a living room concert. So a friend of mine had him at his house. My friend knew that I was a big fan of the Smithereens. He invited me over. And so me and my wife went. I would say there was probably 15 people there, no more than 20. And Pat came in, he set up a mic and a small amp, played his electric guitar through the amp, and he sang for about 45 minutes. Then we broke and had about a 20-minute lunch break. Then he got back up on the mic and sang probably another half an hour. And the highlight of the show was the very last song was the Smithereens classic Blood and Roses. And he actually invited me up to sing with him. And so I got to do a little duet with Pat Benizio singing the Smithereens hit Blood and Roses. So very great memory, a little sad that Pat had passed away. And, so that's my take on living room concerts. I enjoy them and I think they're a cool thing to do. Thanks guys.
That's amazing.
How crazy is that?
I mean, that's really crazy. That is really, really amazing.
Yes.
So that's another element of house concerts that really we hadn't even, you know, crossed your mind. You're like, you're that close. You could literally have, you know, that kind of audience interaction, which is really,
right.
really cool.
Right. Yes. You have to think that the atmosphere just makes it more low key and the artist is more willing to do stuff like that they might not want to do in a real, you know, club atmosphere.
Really.
So how cool was that?
That's very
cool. Thank you very much for that call, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, did anyone get that on recording? Was anyone else? I voice memo going? Let us know.
I think we need to go to more of these like house concert kind of thing. I got to become more of the scene. I got to start hanging out with Dan Gursky more and doing stuff like that. But he also mentioned, the first thing he mentioned was an artist named Megan Slankard.
Yeah.
S-L-A-N-K-A-R-D. Have you heard of Megan?
Have not.
So this is the other cool thing, as Dan mentioned, is that it's a great way to sort of, you know, get introduced to an artist maybe you hadn't heard before, because you get, you know, this intimate setting. It's a great way to sort of hear that person's work. Well, thanks for the
thank you, Tom.
Recommendation there, Tom. So, all right, let's move on here to also on the house concerts. We got a Facebook comment
Scott
from
Bird.
Scott Bird.
Mm-hmm. Let me take this, Jim, all because I have something to say here. Scott writes on Facebook, "This is awesome. I haven't been to one of these more modern versions of a house concert, but I would love to. I first heard David J. Bauhaus Lovin' Rockets doing this."
I had no idea.
That's amazing. "In fact, his website promotes it as a living room shows. You can buy tickets to these shows on the site, and there's even a link to host a living room show. Sadly, there are none in my area, but I keep checking back." So actually, I have two things to say. One, Scott, you need to move. And two, the guy from Bauhaus and Lovin' Rockets does living room shows, yet it sounds like he's making a thing of it. Like, this is a whole circuit he does.
Yeah, says you can buy tickets on the site and can host it. Yeah, so I guess we need to go check that out.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. We got to get more info on this. Yeah, Scott, let us know what you know.
So you can just bypass the whole like promoters.
Isn't
and all
it
that
interesting?
Stuff entirely, right? Just make your own venues.
Man, talk about taking it to the people.
Yeah. All right. Then we also got an email here from Doug Mulvihill.
God bless Doug Mulvihill. All right, go ahead. Say this, and then I want to say something else too. Go ahead.
What am I saying? I'm reading the email?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, just read this.
Okay. The email is about Peter Searcy. He says, we interviewed Peter Searcy.
Yep.
He says, "Peter Searcy, nice get, guys. I was a big Squirrelbait fan back then and was always disappointed their career was so short. Such a powerhouse band with vocals, guitar, and drums all battling it out in a loudness war. Daughtry was always one of my favorite drummers, got all the big Wheel records back in the day, and followed Searcy's solo career through the latest, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
He's really one of the best singers ever."
He really is. And what a nice interview that was that we did. And, you know, at the top of the show, we were talking about how, you know, last show, 2017, 250, all that, and our great listeners, fan mail. Got to give a special shout out to Doug, you know. And for one particular reason, Lee Baines the Third and the Glory Fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I fell in love with that record so hard, Jim. It's like totally my favorite album of the year. And I don't know if you saw recently, but there was you might have heard about this. There was an election down in Alabama, a special Senate election.
I made the papers.
On the morning of that election, Lee Baines the Third and the Glory Fires got in the back of a pickup truck, like old school style, and drove around the state playing songs to try to convince people to get out to the polls.
Really?
Isn't
I didn't
that
know
cool?
That. Yeah.
Yeah. They just punked it up.
So the reason you're talking about that and not Squirrelbait is because earlier Doug recommended Lee Baines.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to put those two and two together. Okay, yeah, yes. He did. He was the one that told us on a Fan Mail Friday, check out Lee Baines' Third and Glory Fires. We did. Man, I just went head over
that's
heels
good.
For that album. Double album. Oh, man. Youth Detention. You got to get it if you don't have it already.
All right. But you're also a big Squirrelbait fan.
Huge Squirrelbait fan. And it was great to talk to to Peter, and he was really entertaining and nice, and just to be so funny and humble about that.
That's great.
That story that he told us about that famous rock star was great.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines.
Okay.
Here we go.
Hey, Jim and Patrick, this is Clay in Chicago, and just listening to the debut album show, and had a couple of extras that I wanted to tell you about. First, Elvis Costello, Welcome to the Working Week. That's a great song. The Pretenders, Precious. Joe Jackson, One More Time, on his debut album. But I think one of the best ones, and this is a group y'all don't ever talk about, Matt Johnson and the first song starts off, I've Been Waiting for Tomorrow.
All my childhood dreams are bursting at the seams and dangling around my knees. I've been deformed by emotional scars, and the cancer of love has eaten out my heart. I've been stripped bare and nobody cares, and all the people I looked up to are no longer.
Very interesting start off there, and then really hits with the drums coming in. So those are just a couple of my favorite debut songs on debut albums. And thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. And, hey, get Mary back on the show. We miss Mary. Take care, guys. Bye.
All right. So first of all, he's referring to Mary Nahorniak,
yeah,
who hasn't been on this show very much, but she was a regular on the old show.
She was a regular on the old show. She was on this show once. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love Mary.
Yeah, she's busy. She's raising a young family.
Yeah,
you know,
things happen.
She's got a lot going on right now. So, but, you know, we miss having her on the show, too. But anyway, getting back to Clay here, thanks for the call. He was referencing the episode we did about track ones from debut albums.
Right.
So the first song you may ever hear from a band on a recording.
Yeah.
And what were some of the best of those? And so he had some good recommendations there. I think some other people also mentioned Welcome to the Working Week as being one that's just, I mean, right out of the gate, boom, hits you really hard.
Yeah. My aim is true.
Yep. Okay, where are we here?
I think we're going to hear from a longtime listener, first-time caller, Jim.
This is not a call. This is an email. But
I know,
here's what he says,
yeah,
yes.
That's a great way to start an email, isn't
it? All right,
it? Yeah.
But this is on the same topic. You want to take this?
Sure. Okay. Most of the time, I miss the bus. I'm participating in many of the most excellent rock convos you guys have because I don't get around to listening to Rock in the Suburbs or any other podcast for that matter for a while. And most of the time I do when I'm cooking dinner for the fam. Okay, so I can understand this, right, Jim? We live in a catch-up kind of binge age, right? That's the great thing about our society. You can watch when you want to watch.
Yeah. I just finished season two of Stranger Things.
Right. Appointment TV no longer exists.
That's right. Also, when you're cooking, you can just say like, hey, Alexa, play Rock in the Suburbs, right? It's like that simple.
And you just set off like 100 people's Alexas.
Oh, did I?
Yeah. Well, then I did too.
But you have to say.
We haven't explored this yet either.
No. You have to say, play Rock in the Suburbs podcast, right? That's
right,
key.
Because otherwise you're going to get yourself some
music from somebody I'm not familiar with. All right, go on. So where are we here from Andrew?
I finally listened to the best opening tracks of debut albums last night. A great exercise, totally academic, but nonetheless great. Unfortunately, while listening, I was like that asshole in the back of the classroom raising my hand with a vengeance trying to get called on. I can't hold back. Here are some of my best openers of debut albums for your consideration that may or may not beat the Violent Femmes, Stone Roses, or Guns N' Roses. Number one, Uncle Tupelo, Graveyard Shift off No Depression. Absolutely blistering.
Well, time won't wait, better hope to begin. Get on, start, needs to be done. It's winding down, there's much you miss. Working on that graveyard shift. But I'm not saying this won't go wrong. It's dead comes along. What I see is true.
That's a good one. Yeah. And others have mentioned that one too.
Yep. Number two, Sex Pistols, Holidays in the Sun. No sense naming the album. They only have one. And we talked about it, right? Yes. But that's a great call too.
Yep.
Number three, Smashing Pumpkins, I Am One off Gish. Phenomenal opening to a brilliant album. If you don't like it, I will fight you. Which, now that I think about it, could be good future material, album fights. I like that. That's it. I got to get to the gym. I'm going to listen to Guns N' Roses.
And that's from Andrew Southard.
Right.
From Springfield, Illinois. Yep.
That was really funny and really nice. And thanks, Andrew.
That first Smashing Pumpkins record, that was on what label? Do you remember? It was before. It was an indie release.
Wasn't on the A&M label. We'll have to talk about this sometime, but you're on your own right now.
I'm trying to look up really quick.
I really don't know a whole lot about the Smashing Pumpkins.
Well, I think you would be delighted to listen to the first one.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, I think over time, the band really changed. Billy Corgan, I think, really changed, mm-hmm. I think, in a lot of ways. But that first record, Gish, is really good. It says here it's on Virgin, but I think Virgin bought it.
Doesn't
I don't
seem right.
Think that's
no.
right. Yeah. It was on an indie label. I don't know what that is right yeah. now, but anyway.
Yeah, they were from Chicago, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was on Carolyn Records.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Out of New York City. Yeah. Yes. I remember the label.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So that takes us to
more first songs, some first albums.
Oh, more.
Yeah.
But there's more. Okay. This is from
our buddy
George Singleton, who lives in Hong Kong. He says, "Hi, Jim and Patrick. Earlier this month, you had a terrific episode on the best debut album openers. Each of those songs are so well crafted that you can hardly believe they're the first cut from a first album. But as you mentioned during the show, there are many others you didn't play. So here are a few I found in just a couple minutes browsing through the collection. Enjoy." Welcome to the working week.
Ding, ding.
Yep. Neat, neat, neat from the Damned's debut.
That's a great call.
Yep.
Absolutely.
My name is Jonas from the Weezer Blue album.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, how can we forget?
Transman Icon MC, man, from Blue Oyster Cult. Down with that, yeah, because I love that. You know this, Jim.
Yeah,
I played
first one.
You the first Blue Oyster Cult album many times.
Yep.
With the Last Days of May, one of my all-time favorite Blue Oyster Cult songs. Man, what a great album that is.
George also mentions the Beatles. I Saw Her Standing There from Please Please Me. Quite a few people mentioned that one. To me, though, it's a little bit different because albums weren't really a thing at that point.
True,
they were sort of a collection of singles, and also. That was the first British release, British album, but it wasn't the first U.S. album. I think that's why we didn't include it before, but it obviously a great song. And really, you know, just again, sort of shoots right out of the gate at you, right?
That's right.
And then he says, and then he just closes up by saying, your friend and supporter in Hong Kong who listens every day when I can.
That's what the new t-shirts are going to say. I listen every day when I can.
All right, thanks very much for those, George. So there you go.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
If others want to keep that going, talk about great album openers off of debut albums.
Do it.
You can call the Suburban Party Line, 612-440-1984.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com.
Do that.
Or you can leave a comment on Facebook or Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on both those places at Suburbs Pod. You can also find us on Instagram, also at Suburbs Pod. So that's ways to get in touch with us so that you can get on the next Fan Mail Friday, right?
That's right. And you know, the folks who took advantage of talking about Side One, Track One, Debut Album One, were doing what we asked them to do at the end of most shows. Right. Like, hey, we want to hear what you did. But it was cool that they all did. So thank you for that.
Okay. Now we're going to close out this Fan Mail Friday. This is the last
this
year.
Last one of the year. And thanks to all who wrote in and to all a good night.
It's from Joe Fleischer. It's a little bit long, but it's really good stuff here. Yeah, so stick with me here. It's about the episode we did about the cost of tickets, concert tickets these days.
Joe gets fired up.
Joe says, it's a topic I think about a lot these days. When the Foo Fighters came to my town, I went to Ticketmaster and I had pretty good seats picked out, but balked at the about $129 per ticket price, including fees. The fact is, I've seen pretty good arena shows. I've seen Springsteen, Tom Petty, AC/DC, Rush, a lot of great bands, but I've never had a transcendent experience in an arena or stadium. There's just too much working against the fan, starting with the fact that you're in an arena built for basketball. You're surrounded by people talking, yelling, singing. You're usually far away, and the sound often is not good. For me, the life-changing shows have happened in clubs with amps just a few feet away, blasting bass into my chest as the band performs right in front of me. It's being in the crowd in a Black Flag show in 84, chanting along to the lyrics in a room filled with so much energy that I really worried about the stage crashing down. There were fans flying over my head, jumping off the stage, just absolute mayhem. I've had the chance to see my favorite band, Norway's Clevertak, right? Clevertak, pump out crushing metal with their orange amps literally strapped to the stage to contain the rumbling on two occasions while gripping the front row rail. At one, the singer repeatedly held the microphone out to me to scream the signature phrase of their best-known song, which in Norwegian is Blodtorst, but he says it's translates to bloodthirst. By the way, Keveltak, okay, is opening all of Metallica's shows on the current European tour. Those shows, I'm sure, are good, but nothing like the ones I've seen in much more intimate settings. In 1983, I stood on the out edge of the Circle Pit while the Ramones blasted out 50 songs in 90 minutes. Yes. I entered another state of mind at some of these gigs. After only a beer or two, losing myself in dancing, pogoing, shouting the choruses, I became immersed in a music ritual together with a large part of the crowd and in some cases the band too. It's a rock show with propulsive drum beats, chants, dancing, lights, and all the other elements that our ancient ancestors used to reach another state of consciousness. You have to be a part of it, not sitting there watching it. Can magical experiences happen in an arena? Maybe if you're a huge Grateful Dead fan and you're on the floor, but in the back row of section 304, it's just not going to happen. One more thing. In the average arena, I'd say at least half the audience is getting subpar sound. There's just no way to make the upper tiers of a concrete and steel building sound good. At outdoor shows, if you're sitting anywhere behind the mixing board, you might as well go home, put on that band's record in your living room, turn it up to 9 or 10, and then go listen to it in your basement. It's going to sound about the same as live band sounds from 80 yards away. Thanks for all the great shows, guys. Signed, Joe Fleischer. All right.
That's beautiful. That was long. And Joe gets fired up. I love when Joe sends us some stuff. And obviously, ticket prices are important. Because I think if you remember a certain poster, Jim, from earlier this year that we talked about, the Roger Waters tour poster, Joe got fired up about that too, which is awesome. But, you know, I got to say, on whole, I agree. You know?
I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that before. Yeah. I would much rather go to a club and be close to the band and feel like you're part of this, you're truly part of this shared experience mm-hmm. with the people who are there, as opposed to something that holds, you know, 15, 20,000 people or more. It just doesn't have the same vibe. Not to say I don't do that from time to time. You know, how else are you going to see Springsteen unless, I guess now you can go see him on Broadway, but let's talk about ticket prices, right? But, you know, there's certain acts that you feel are still going to be worth it to see in a venue like mm-hmm. that, but there aren't that many. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. We're talking about transcendent house shows now. Yeah. That's where we are.
That's where we are. Okay. Well, I think now we should end the year with some Bloodtorst.
Yeah.
How about that?
Hell yes.
I think I'm finally getting this. It's Kvelertak. Kvelertak.
Oh, you were talking about Kvelertak.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
I didn't know what you were saying earlier.
All right. So here you go. Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys next year.
Yeah.
Kev
Kevel Tark. Talk about taking it to the people.